The wild here doesn't whisper, it roars. Glaciers crack like thunder. Waterfalls carve paths through time. And in the middle of it all, she waits. Motor Yacht Unbridled. A sanctuary of warmth and refinement in the heart of Alaska's untamed frontier. Bears wander the shoreline. Whales breach on the horizon. Seals nap on drifting ice while you sip champagne on the aft deck. This isn't a cruise, it's a calling, and only the bold will answer. Now booking your next unforgettable charter, yachtunbridled.com or through your preferred charter broker.
Top of the morning, folks. It's Captain Liam here from Motor Yacht Unbridled. This is currently in Seattle getting ready for next year's Alaska season. But I'm taking some opportunity. I'm very blessed to have Erica Lay-El-Kruko. How are you today, Erica?
I'm really good. Thank you, Liam. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure. The book came out October 1st, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so the book is A Super Yacht Life, How to Start, Succeed and Stay Sane. It's available on Amazon.
It's available in paperback, ebook, and we've got it on Kindle Unlimited as well. So if you've got a subscription to Kindle, then it's pretty much free, I think.
It's a no-brainer there, is it?
Absolutely. That's girl maths, I think. It doesn't matter that you've already paid for it. It's free.
Yeah. I love the title. It says help me, but it's almost like help me, help you. That's kind of the narrative.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I wanted to kind of cover all bases from the very start right through to the very end of your yachting career. So hopefully there's something, you know, a little bit of something in there for everyone.
Yeah, well, tell me about your story though, Erica. How did you kind of come into this space of yachting and what first drew you to the yachting sector?
To the floating circus. This is always a tricky one to answer because it's kind of a long story. So I'll try and condense it down. But I had a corporate life. I was a grown-up in London once upon a time. And I just finished studying construction management at university, and I was sponsored through it by various construction companies. And I was a project manager. And at the end of university, I was like 6 or 7 years into a career. And I was like, I haven't had a year out. I need to just go and do that now. And then I'm going to come back and carry on with my career. So I started that year out. And I'm still on that year out 20 years later, as often happens. You know, life presents you with opportunities and off you go. But yeah, I worked as a diver for various dive operations. I started out in Spain where my parents were at the time. And then I went on to Mexico. And then from there, the course director asked me to go to the Bahamas to represent him and work with this dive operation. So off I went, quite happy with that. And again, it was just meant to be temporary and ended up staying a year and a half, had the most incredible experience with these luxury charters, and then ended up coming back to Europe, came to Mallorca again, just temporarily, just passing through. Let's just see what's going on here. And I walked down the front and I was just like, good grief, look at all these boats. This is incredible. I mean, you know, I've spent time in marinas over in the States and the Bahamas and in the Caribbean. And it's just nothing when you walk along the front of Palma and there's just 1,000 masts. So long story short, ended up working in a yachting office as a recruiter, as a recruiting assistant, which is a job I nearly took before I went in construction. So I kind of went, okay, well, let's give this a go then. And it turned out I really liked it. I was pretty good at it. So I stuck at it. And that was 2007. So yeah, 18 years ago. So that's how I ended up recruiting in yachts.
And then El-Kruko, though.
El-Kruko, I launched in 2013. I'd been working for a big Monaco company, a management company, for 5 years. And then, yeah, just decided it was time to go in my own direction. So, yeah, launched in the January of 2013 and haven't really looked back. It's been 12 exciting years.
Well, as you know, reputation is everything in the space of yachting. You know, I must say, you've got an exceptional reputation. Everyone that I speak to or know about you has just put you on the highest, you know, echelon of the industry. And it's a tough industry, especially in recruiting.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. And it's just, I've spent an awful lot of time living vicariously through hundreds, if not thousands, of crew now. I mean, I'm like, gosh, it's been 18 years. You know, I've been on dozens of boats. I've been really lucky with my clients. A lot of them have taken me on as like race crew for a bit of fun when they're over in Parma, and one of them took me to Sardinia, and it's just, yeah, it's been an incredible journey. But it's just, I think it's getting to know the people in the industry who I'm representing, and from both sides, from, you know, captains, management companies, owners, and then, you know, from and captains, chiefs, heads of departments, all the way down to the greenies. But yeah, I think it's been a wild ride, put it that way.
Yeah, well, I see from my end, I'm just a simple, humble fisherman, I say. I came from a diving background, so I was a dive instructor at 18 and kind of similar type of background. But then I'm just driving these vessels, they just got bigger and more crew and more crew. And it's the hardest thing I find as a captain is to try and find that crew member. Now, what's some of the things that kind of you look for to find that balance between what the captain's asking? Because captains, we can be quite vague. We're like, Erica, sort it out. Find someone to fill this role. And you're like,
Captain's vague? Never. No. Well, and this is the thing. I think when you've been doing it as long as I have and you're a bit of an old curmudgeon about the whole thing, I'm very good at reading between the lines. So, you know, I can chat to a head of department or a captain, you tell me what you're after, you know, so I'll get the nitty gritty. And as you know, being a captain, the easy bit is looking at the qualifications. It's like, okay, I'm looking for a chief officer. He's been on a 55 meter. Oh, that's similar to unbridled. Okay, it's been, this charter and private, very good. He's got his chief officer. Very good. You know, his chief mate 3000. Oh, very good, very good. But then it's like, well, what about the person? So it's up to me to dig into the personality and find out about, the type of thing that the crew do. I mean, in the old days, you'd have that difference in crews. You'd have the barflies, the ones who were party, party, let's go. And then perhaps you'd have the calmer crews who were, yeah, we go for a hike, we go and do yoga. Now, nowadays, most people are a bit more focused on the wellness side because, you know, rather than partying hard and burning out. But yeah, it's more about and finding out the nationalities on board. That's always a big part of things because the cultural differences. But I think the bigger the boat, often the more diverse the crew. And that's quite an important thing because if you get too much of one nationality, they'll become the dominant race on board and it kind of pushes other people back into the shadows a bit. We can't help it. You know, it's what we do. If you have all British, we'll just take over and, you know, there'll be cups of tea constantly throughout the day. If you've got South Africans, there's going to be biltong in the engine room. It's just one of those things.
Exactly. So, there's no magic. You know, in my experience, you know, and this might not sound right, but I try and really peak a crew for the purpose of that season. So you spend time building a crew, and I try not to use the word permanent or temporary even. I say our goal is to achieve the highest standard for this season, for this crew right now. And let's be patient together. Let's build a team at the end of the season. Let's review where we all are career-wise and make some decisions. And that's helped me achieve some good standards. But what it means, though, is there's no magic mix of nationalities or skill sets. It's more about the teamwork. How do you bring that unity? So what are some of the things you've seen in your career, your industry, looking at these? How do you see crew build a team? That's something that when crew join a vessel, how can they be part of that team? Because there's a period there of a month or two where they just don't know anyone, they're nervous.
Oh, God, yeah, 100%. I mean, you think starting in any new job in any industry, it doesn't have to be the yacht industry. There's that sort of settling in period. But I think everything in super yachting is sort of concentrated. The fact that we all have to live on top of each other, you know, there's no going home at 5 o'clock. You don't clock out and go to the pub with your friends who are, you know, a totally different industry. You're all over each other all the time. So it's essential that you find, you click, and you have to do it fast or you're probably out. I actually just wrote an article for DockWalk and it was on it's about how to build the ultimate charter team. So, yeah.
Has it been published yet?
I don't think it's gone out yet because I only submitted it, I think, early October. So it's probably going to come out in a future edition. Fine. But yeah, I'll give you a shout when it's out. And yeah, I was speaking to captains and crew, heads of departments, to say, like, what do you look for
Yeah.
You know, when you're doing charter, because chartering is a different beast to perhaps a private setup where you might be looking for the long-term commitment where the owner wants to come back every year and see the same faces on their holidays. Whereas as you'd like, chartering is like, go, how do we build the ultimate team? And you've got to have if that piece of the puzzle, you can't have one bit that's slightly wonky or loose because everything falls apart. It's that loose thread and then it just goes down the, you know, swanny. I'm trying to moderate my language today. Sorry, it's Friday afternoon.
No stress at all. Like a family, like what do people say, how many crew do you have? I'm like, well, on Unbridled, there's probably 20 people that I consider crew that I work with, and they come and go. Because sometimes people burn out and people need space. They need to play with their families. They need to go to the weddings and they need to go to their birthdays. Because I've missed 25 years at sea. I've missed all of that. Traditionally. So now I value that in the team. And I'm like, it's all right. Your job is to train the person below you to be as good, if not better than you.
Absolutely.
That's a hard thing to say to people because their ego gets in the way, their security of their position gets in the way. But I say, once that's done, you then train to be better than me or better than
absolutely.
Your team. And that's how you progress in your career.
100%. I mean, it's like, I mean, with the corporate background that I have, I was really lucky to work it for managers who always wanted to mentor and train. And that is super important. But secondly, you know, I've always lived by the idea that as a manager, as a leader, you should be hiring people who are better at, you know, when you identify your weaknesses and then hire someone who's really good at that. And it might be something really techy and geeky or administrative duties that you haven't got the concentration for, get someone who loves a spreadsheet. It might be someone like, oh, I'm not very creative. It's like find someone who's an absolute artist and who will just bring that, you know, and especially with the different departments like your interior team and your galley as well. You know, you've got your chief officer to lean on who's going to do all the drills and the safety reporting and just so that everyone is then really good at their jobs, but can help each other as well.
I love Premier League football. So I'm a, don't know why, but I'm a supporter of Liverpool from a very
young Arsenal all the way. Sorry.
breaking up. I have to end the call now.
It's been great. So am I.
I hope, well, I shouldn't say this, but I do hope you get the league this year. I really do. Arsenal, if anyone deserves a good fight and a good finish, it's Arsenal. But, a lot of times this year, when I do the crew sheet for the guests when they arrive, we've got 12 to 14 crew. I've been putting it in a Premier League lineup where you see almost a different ranks and position. And I've really pushed home to the crew that you are not a junior crew. I'm not employing you as a less in terms of rank as someone. We are all Premier League players. We're employed professionally under a contract with a certain wage. We all have different agreements. You hold your position and support the crew around you. And to see junior crew, like, get a bit of pride and go, I've got my job. I'm not just a fourth stewardess, for example. I'm not just a junior deckie. My job on this boat to support the other team members, and I'll be called to do jobs if someone's injured or if someone's tired. And that's helped me create it. But it was tough. Some of the senior crew were like, well, no, they're not as important as me. And I'm like, it's not about the you add. It's about the value we make as a community, as a team, you know?
Everyone is essential. Yeah. As I say, it's like a puzzle. If you take one piece out, it doesn't work. Nobody wants it. It's no good. You know, and it's every cog in that machine has a purpose. It's essential. It doesn't matter if it's a really big cog right in the middle or if it's the diddy little one over here. It's everyone is essential. You know, and it doesn't matter if it's private or charter, motor or sail, big or small. And actually more so, I think on the smaller vessels, it's always interesting to see that because everybody has the big overlap, whereas in the larger vessels, it's a bit more, you know, your department is a bit more your department. Whereas, you know, when you're on a small boat, you'll have a captain opening a bottle of wine for the guests because the stew's busy and whatnot. But it's, you know, and I know it's so cheesy, but teamwork really does make the dream work.
Yeah. Like I love the crew I work with. You know, I really value them all. And it's hard because I have to step back a lot. Like I say, I'm not the captain, I'm the coach. My job is to help you as a team achieve success. If it fails, I have to stand up and take the blame.
That's it. It's on you. Yeah.
If we fail, you know, I think one time this year we kind of celebrated a failure in a small sense. And I was like, cool, that's okay. Let's celebrate that and let's acknowledge that and let's move forward. But tell us about the book. When did the seed start for a book? Was it kind of you were a recruiter, you saw this transition of crew?
Well, it's something I've been asked to do. Like people have said to me for years and years, when are you going to write a book? And I've always laughed it off, like, yeah, don't be silly. And then this summer I just thought, right, let's get it done. So I've been writing for magazines for Onboard magazine, Dock Walk, Boat International, and actually started out with what's called Yacht Essentials and Crew Essentials, all at sea over in the Caribbean years ago. So I've been writing about crew issues and often about mental health issues, welfare, like as soft skills and that side of the yachting industry and people's stories for years and years. And so I just thought, why don't I put it all in one spot? Like, I did have another website at one stage where I had my yachting articles on it, but it was all a bit sort of haphazard because I'd write one and then pop it on and it'd be at social media addiction in the industry or trolls on social media, something like that. And then there would be a first aid on yachts and mental health. And it was all jumping around. It was like, why don't I just create a resource for crew of all levels? And so in May of this year, I wrote the chapter list and I was like, right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to have sections. I'm going to have a green section. I'm going to have a mid-level section. I'm going to have a mental health part. I'm going to do senior crew. And then I'm going to have a positive section, especially after mental health, because that can get a bit, heavy. So yeah, I wrote the chapter list and then I just started writing each chapter and formatting them and whatnot, because a lot of it I've already written in some format somewhere for some magazine or newspaper or whatever. And I was like, right, let's just get this all together nice and neat and tidy. And I tend to hyper focus on projects. So I was just like, over the summer, July, August, I was like, let's get this done. So I just smashed it out, got it done, and off we went.
Let's stay in the thing and let's knock it out, you know?
Yeah, that's it. And the thing is, when you work in recruitment, there are peaks and troughs in recruitment and in the season. You know, it's super, super busy in the springtime because we've got all the yachts coming in from winter or coming out of winterization and they need crew. So we have a huge, busy first half of the year. And then round about June, the yachts start clearing off for their season and you get a few last minute changes and whatnot. But then generally for me, July, August and half of September are pretty dead. And then it starts up again, October, November, some of December, and then it will go flat again over Christmas and New Year, and then starts again February, March. So when I have the downtime, I like, what can I do now? Right. And off I go and get stuck into something.
Stories, because during those down periods, I'm sure there's times where it's, I need a chief stewardess tomorrow or I need a deckhand tomorrow. Because
always,
always, is it?
Yeah. I mean, there's, a lot of the time, it's a lot quieter. There's not like the constant buzz, but then you will get the calls like, my God, my chief stewardess has just blown her knee out or my chef's had an accident in the galley and burnt their hand and then, we need a chart someone in temporarily. So then it is all hands on deck and it's go. And then back to whatever project I have my fingers stuck into.
So what's getting the most kind of feedback on the book so far? What subject? What do you think is a hot subject in yachting at this stage?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the mental health always resonates still. I mean, I did think at one stage that the whole mental health talk was going to kind of go off the boil because there's so much out there now. I mean, when I started writing about mental health years ago, it was all a bit I can talk about that. And especially for me, I'm British. It's like the stiff upper lip. Everything's fine. It's not. Yeah. Everything's crumbling. Yeah. But yeah, I'm still a lot of that. And I think there's been a lot of focus for the advice for the green crew from one end. And then also I'm getting feedback from the captains at the other end of the spectrum saying like how interesting it is to relive what it was like as a greenie. Look, it's like you've reminded me of the struggles of that. And also a captain now would not be applying for jobs and work in the same way that green crew are today in 2025. I've seen the difference in the industry from 18 years ago to today is just incredible. But it's like that in every industry, you know, whatever industry you're working in, things change. It's been two decades. But yeah, I think that the senior crew are finding it interesting.
You mean in a positive sense, like the crew that are joining are a bit more professional? Is that kind of what you're saying? Or
I just think that, I say professional. They have to do courses now, whereas 20 years ago, you could just rock up down the dock in Palma with your flip-flops on, backpacking through Europe. And we had a lot of Australians and New Zealand that we don't really get as many of them now. And it would just be like, you know, g'day, mate, you know, got any work? And obviously, you know, they'd hop on the pasta. It'll be like, yeah, come and give us a hand. You ever done some varnishing? No, but, you know, willing to learn. Bed and board for a few days. And then a lot of these people ended up sailing around the world. You know, whereas now it's a much more sort of considered and thought out process. It's like, I'd like to become yacht crew. Right, I'm going to need my STCW. I need my ENG1 medical. I'm going to do a powerboat level 2. I'm going to do a stewardess course. You know, whereas before it was, you kind of wing it.
Now I'm going to do a barista course and a cocktail course. And it's like, it becomes now everyone needs a second skill, it seems like.
Yeah. That's it, or another language, or, you know, or I'm also a yoga instructor or a fitness instructor, or a personal trainer, or,
It's a very tough industry. I mean, I love it. I'm passionate about it. I've done it for a long time, and I'm kind of money. I've always just wanted to go to sea, build teams and succeed for their clients. But over the last kind of 5 years, I've kind of realized that if I don't invest in the junior crew to help them progress, not only am I wasting my time, you know, but I'm not giving back either. So it's a reward, a win-win situation. And a lot of captains, I don't think, understand that yet. It's not about you. It's not about your ego or how important you are as a captain. The win-win is training and giving back. And that's what I see as a victory.
Yeah, I feel quite strongly about that as well, because I don't know how much time you spend on social media. I get sucked in a bit and then I have to take a step back. I'm like, oh God, why?
I love your walks when you're walking in the mountain. I love that. I'm like, hope she doesn't trip.
when I'm plodding along, I tend to edit those out, those bits, or I fall over the dog. But on social media, when you see people saying, you know, and it's people sort of my age, it's Gen X, and they're all going like, back in my day. And I'm like, oh, you know, sit down, stop that. I said, you don't think that when you rocked up in your flip-flops with your massive silly hair because you've been backpacking and all over the place, where you rolled out of the corner bar at 3 a.m. and came to work, so you don't think that the captains then were looking at you going, dear God, what are we dealing with now? Look at the state of this junior crew. This industry is going to crumble. It's going to fall apart. It's not professional. But they still took the time to train you up. And, you know, without these guys and girls, you know, the chief stews and the chief engineers and the captains wouldn't be where they are today. And it's like, you've got to pay it forward. You've got to train the youngins. And yes, they have a different way of doing things and a very different way of, you know, wanting to work and expectations. I'm sure we all did as well when we were juniors. But, you know, of course, when you're junior, you know it all because, you know, that happens.
And after 3 to 5 years in industry, you're an expert. You know, you're like, happened and that boat, this happened. I'm like, cool, man. It doesn't matter. Whatever happened on the other boats. And this is, I find interesting in yachting, is every vessel is slightly different because you have one captain who's responsible and his management style. There's a lot of freedom in the management style as opposed to a corporate structure. And there's a lot less accountability in his management style than there is in a corporate structure. So it does create that individual approach. And there is the right boat. That's what I say. There is the right vessel for everyone. It's finding it. You know, you might be a diver and that's, you're looking for that dive vessel, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or a fisherman. But so what's your tips for kind of crew now that have done 5 years in the industry? Because we always talk about green crew. So what's the point of done 5 years in the industry? They're kind of looking for more of a career move. Where do you think they should go? Focus.
They should buy this, Les.
I love it.
Yeah, no, there's a good chunk in here for senior crew as well. It's, I think, when you, and even, you know, if you've just done one season or 1 year, again, those crew, there's like, these are the forgottens in the middle of their career. Like,
Exactly.
Nobody gives them any advice. You know, there's no resources out there for them, which is another reason why I wrote the books. It's like there's a bit on Green Crew and then the rest is further, you know, that whole journey ahead of you and your entire career. And I always say to people after they've completed their first contract, be it a season or a year or 2 years even, you know, stop, take stock of what you've learned. What did you enjoy? You know, what do you want to do more of? Are there any areas that you think, I didn't really love doing that, but I think I need to be better at it, you know, and look for courses. They don't always have to be specifically yachting courses. I mean, because everybody gets on, you know, that specific route. So if you're deck, you're the, right, I must start my training record book. I have to do my OOW. Ah, yes, you know, and if you're engineering, it's like, I've got to get on the boat over 350 kilowatts because I need to sign off for my small vessel program and all this sort of thing. But there's all the soft skills that kind of get neglected and, you know, they just sort of float away by the by in this industry. And interior crew now, of course, we've got the guest PYA career structure now, which is great. So you can get a COC in that. But I think, you know, we've got really for the soft skills is helm. And I don't love it. I don't love it.
Anyway, I used to have to do a butler course, and it's the Udemy is the name. It's an online butler course for an.
Yes, Udemy. That was all the rage in COVID. I think I do about 10 courses on there. It's like, if not, I'm going to go insane.
Well, yeah. I do it. This isn't when I have a situation, like if something happens that I'm not really happy with, I'm like, all right, crew, we're going back to training. With my Udemy, going back to Udemy. We're going back to a butler course, and we all need to do it because there's one thing in yachting that I don't think people can train, which is the presence and the movement and the flow of things. And stewardesses are much better. But deck crew and the flow between deck and interior and the captain and engineering, it all needs to work together to give that unique experience. So the client goes from lunch to the aft deck, or they relax, and the deck crew meets them patiently and not just full of energy, and then they slowly build the energy levels up, and then they bring the guests calmly and safely and transition back into a calmer environment for the stewardesses. And that's where I think the space is. How do we do that dance to keep the guests moving, you know?
Yeah. And how do you do it then? How do you train this into your crew?
Oh, repetition. Like we do. I'll pretend yourself, you and the other person with the two guests. You walk down the dock. You get picked up by the tender. You come around to the stern of the vessel. Even at the marina, we practice it. The stern of the vessel, you walk on board. Stewardess greets you. Let's practice. And then you say, what did we learn? Well, you didn't offer the hand, or you shouldn't have offered the hand. You didn't support the leg came up. You didn't introduce yourself. The chief stewards didn't meet them on the swim platform or whatever the flow is. And we pick apart the points without the pressure of the guests.
Brilliant. Yeah.
But that's not in a course. That's just me over the years seeing these mistakes going, why?
No, that's it. That's very true. And it's great because, I mean, it's like with any situation, you wouldn't, you know, and in any industry, we should always practice what we're going to do before we do it for something like that, you know. And speaking to charter captains recently for that article I just wrote, they were saying one of the boats is like 100 meter plus motor yacht. And he was saying, we practice before the guests come. But when they do come, it's not like, oh no, you don't get it all horribly wrong. And then it was a 30 meter on the opposite end of the scale. The captain said the owner comes and he's like, no, go on, I'm guinea pig. I'm charter guest. Go on. And and they work with him on it and he lost it and he has great fun with it. He's like, right, I'm gonna be difficult today. And they're like, oh no. So you know, you just to get people into that mindset because it's a lot of acting, isn't it?
I always say it doesn't rain on the rich because the crew hold the umbrella. And it means that we are in control. We are in control of the outcome of this. The guests, they'll come at you, you know, with some issues and I'll say, oh, you see the whales over there? You know, it's like, crew, learn to deflect, you know, learn to deflect the energies and any issues, and we try and work together with these guests. You can't be confrontational. You can't, you know, you need to kind of distract and deflect because you've got to create impossible dream. And you only get, like, I get goosebumps because it only happens for really short moments every day, like really short, where the principal guest has his wife and she's relaxing and the children are there in the hot tub, and there's a music's going, and the wind's perfect, and there's it happens, and there's like 5 minutes, and I walk up, and is everything okay? And he's like, perfect, Captain. I'm like,
yes, nailed it.
But that's so short, and then all of a sudden, the flies come out, or something happens, or a boat washes too close.
Yeah,
the thing you can't control, but you keep going for that short period. And that, when I train, my advice to crew is just keep hitting the ball towards the net. Just doesn't matter if you score or not. Keep trying it.
That's it. I say to crew, especially like the younger crew, is that it's like we're like this industry. We're like swans on the water, you know. Yes. So we're elegantly gliding past, but underneath. Paddling like hell.
What advice would you give captains, and be honest, captains and head of departments, what advice would you give them to help choose crew and retain good crew?
Oh, gosh, this is a great one, isn't it? This is a huge topic. Yeah.
That's why I'm asking you that advice too.
The retention is a huge issue, and I think it seems to be, from my standpoint, it looks like it's been since COVID. Everybody had a bit of a mindset shift. Suddenly, it's like, now you mentioned earlier that now you value all those weddings and birthdays and special occasions that you missed when you were younger, growing up through the industry, that you couldn't ask for time because you need to lose your job if you ask for time off in August. And now it's like we're finding ways to accommodate that. I think now the new generation especially, they want the work-life balance. And if we want to keep them, we're going to have to respect that. And I'm not suggesting we do two-on, two-off rotation for a brand new deckhand. That's never going to catch on. The owners will go bananas at us. But I think, having some respect for that work-life balance. How we achieve that in this industry, I cannot answer that one for us right now. But I know with the senior crew, definitely rotation or just more freedom, more time off is what people are after these days. In the old days, it was like, money, give us all the money, throw money at me and I'll do anything you like. And now it's like, money's nice, but so is seeing my Nana for her 90th birthday party, or being the maid of honor at my sister's wedding, or for some people, it's like, especially for the guys, like being at home for the birth of my son, which, I'm horrified to hear that people missed things like that back at, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So it's like, I couldn't leave the boss. Like, oh my God, who are you working for?
My wedding, I was in the pool with my brothers and my family in Dominican, and the owner called up and said, we've got a child. I need you to go back to the boat, or I need you to go back to the yacht. And I had like 2 weeks off. And it was just the insecurity of the owner and me not being on the boat that created this worry for him. And he wanted to move the boat from, wherever it was in the Caribbean to another spot. And I was like, yeah, no problem. I love going to sea. But to this day, my family who flew from Australia just go, why? I said, well, it's the industry. That was the industry then. Now, part of my introduction is, what dates are important for you? And please, everyone, put your vacation requests in as early as you can do it. There may be a not, but there may be a yes. And I can and crews leave. And that's where I say, I think the solution is having bigger teams, either on the payroll or as temporary, that are almost permanently temporary, where they can do a deck roll, move a second, third engineer maybe, tender driver, some hybrid crew that could float and cover 3 or 4 positions. And that's where Unbridled's been successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I work with some of the bigger motor yachts that have floaters, and it's like, one, they're like, we need a floater for the deck team, please. And it's a bit of a jack of all trades. And they'll cover the different, they've got a team of deckies. Then they've got the bosun and they'll cover up to the bosun level. But they have the ability to step down and be a junior and, or step up and be the bosun or the lead deckhand, and that flexibility. Yeah. And also with the interior crew as well, having a stew who can jump on and relieve them all so they can have their time off if they're on maybe a 3-on-1-off kind of program. But I think it's easier to implement perhaps with private vessels when the owner knows what's happening, when they're going to come on board, when they've got their trips, because they're usually very organized and don't do the last minute thing as much. Whereas with charters, it's a more challenging thing, I think. But if you have really good rotation going on where you've got the two people rotating are just slot in, they have their day hand over and they just know each other very well. They're, you know, they're complementary to the way of working. If you get rotation right, it's brilliant. And you've got to stagger the rotation so that when you've got Captain A on, there's people that you get the, hang on.
Yeah.
Got a tooth back in. You know what I'm trying to say? I'm getting ahead of myself.
Got it.
But yeah, everyone gets to work with everyone else. Yeah, you stagger it all. But it's, I think rotation seems to be the biggest retainer. Also training budgets and training allowance. That's right. One that's coming up, especially for anyone who's working on tickets, knowing that they have someone on board who can help them, say, fill out their training record book, yeah. Or with the interior crew helping with modules towards their PYA guest, or just learning new skills. But I think if you get someone working for, if your manager, your head of department, or your captain is a great mentor, that will hold on to crew really well.
Yeah. Also, for me, it's what I've seen too, is when you allocate time to crew in the payroll, meaning during work hours to track, and you say, it is part of your job to train. As important as shamming the windows, cleaning the decks, doing the scuppers, you need to allocate a certain period of the week where you are enhancing your skill set. In whatever, maybe cocktails for the stews, it may be bridge time and, you know, familiarizations in a bridge, things like that. So that seems to help. What about the other one, which is tough, is allocating time, you know, I don't know, it's hard to kind of go through it, but mental health training. Because right now I've done a lot of courses. I've just done a leadership course with Green Racing. But getting crew out of their comfort zones into that space is a sensitive topic because they think therapy. They think there's something wrong.
Yeah, and that is just, it's a really old-fashioned kind of mindset that we're all, you know, I'm from the generation where if somebody was going for therapy, it was like, what's wrong with them?
Yeah.
You know, it's not, whereas I think the young'uns today would be like, oh yeah, and quite openly say, I spoke to my therapist about that and they said X, Y, Z. And the old generation are like, you did what? You know, you admit to that? Oh my God. You know, it's just not, it's, again, it's that mind shift. I think the older ones in the industry, we have to adapt to the younger ones now. And
see, I didn't know that. You're saying the younger ones are more in tune with the mental health issues or the challenges or...
I'll say so. Yeah.
I'm not nervous to address it, but as a captain of a later generation with some great president, I'm like, I don't want to upset you either. So I don't want to say this. But so the way I do it is say, individually you can do a course or that together we can do a course. So it could be a team exercise. That's kind of the approach I'm going to use.
Yeah, I think that's wise. And also it's having that open door policy. And you sound like you've got a very good relationship with all your crew because you treat them all like equals, not like, you know, not, you don't, the hierarchy is there and it's respected, but, you know, there's that open door, you're approachable. So, you know, junior crew aren't scared of you.
I'll be honest, the negative of that is a lot of times a junior crew over, I don't know, it's hard to say, they go too quickly because of the opportunity I give them. And they see in their minds too quickly then build the foundation and they feel like they're excellent, can't do anything wrong, they're irreplaceable. I'm like, I've been in your own 25 years. I'm replaceable.
Yeah.
Everyone's replaceable. Always remember that. So there's always this come to Jesus moment where you've got to remind people that this industry is very unforgiving. Like it's very unsympathetic and uncompassionate, industry as a whole. And that's where the Premier League football comes in. Tomorrow you're played it out. And for some reason, and there's no reason to it. It's just, here's your notice period, here's your package. It's been a pleasure.
Off you go. Yeah. It's something I say a lot to the younger crew is like, don't rush.
Stop
rushing. Because everyone wants to get up. You know, I want to be chief stew. And it's like, no, don't do that yet. Because once you've been a chief or a head of department, it's very hard to then take a step back because, you know, you could be a chief stew after a year and, you know, smash it and be good at it. And then you go on to another boat and it's, you're way over your head and you realize, oh no, I only knew how to be chief stew on that yacht in that environment. It's like, you expose yourself to all of them first.
Yeah.
You know, work on different. And also, and I say to people, have fun first. You don't need that responsibility in your life. You're 25. Yeah. Have some fun. See the world. You know, do stuff. Be let loose. Be, you know, a little bit irresponsible. Not on board, yeah. Safety first. But you know what I mean? You know, enjoy your life a bit. Stop rushing to get to the top. And then, you know, once you're at the top, it can be a very lonely place, yeah. When you have to be like, you're on watch tomorrow and telling people off.
I see a lot of, we've got a beautiful chief stewardess, Tiffany, now, and a blessing, but we went through a couple of chief stews and it was like, Tiffany's just, and I said, Tiffany, would you like to have a discuss the opportunity? And she's like, no. I'm like, that's exactly the answer I wanted, because that means you're already, you know what I mean? If you want to say no, it means that you know that there's things you don't know.
Yes.
You need to grow into that role. And that, when I see that, and then the opposite is so many crew go, oh, I could do a second stew job. I'll do half a job anyway, or on deck.
Yeah.
Jimmy Bosun. It's like, well, you don't know how to paint, or you don't know how to
fish. Yeah.
That is a bosun's role, not just that you're strong looking and you can, you know, run a jet ski. That's not a bosun's role. So
absolutely.
The progression, like, it's very good advice, Erica. Be patient.
Yeah.
That's what I tell them. Patient. Be so humble and patient that the progression becomes beautiful and you see it on the red, you know?
That's it. Just that nice and slow, steady wins the race. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. We can put all those phrases and sayings in there and it's true. But so what do you think about longevity? Because I have views. Well, as you probably gathered, I have a lot of opinions on a lot of things. So
the only problem is Zoom cuts out after 1 hour, so I have to wrap it up.
Okay, sorry.
Well, I'm blessed. I've worked for, when I started my career, it was 2 years, do a course, 2-3 years in a boat, 2-3 years in a boat. That's kind of my longevity. Now I really
split
into season. And I say, if you can get through 3 seasons on a boat, oh, be blessed.
Yeah.
I want you to go through the challenges. I want to see some, you've pushed through the obstacles of a full season. And then, okay, had some downtime, you've had a holiday, do another season. And the crew I'm with now. And then I say, after a year to a junior crew, go look for another boat. If you're not getting enough tender time, if you're not getting enough, you need another course. When I employ a junior green deckhand, I'm like, by the end of year one, you must be going to your yacht master offshore. If you're not, I'm not going to renew your contract. And that's emotional for them. They're like, oh, no, I'm dead serious. You need to get your yacht rating. You need to fill in your form and do your training record book in 1 year. Sick. And if you're not, then we're not going forward. And then that motivates, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I get a lot of captains who are saying, like, no, there's no longevity on that CV. I won't consider them. It's like, but you, so you'd hire someone who's, say, done 1 year on one yacht. So they've been exposed to one team of people and one way of working versus someone who's done like 3 different yachts on 3 temporary contracts, because that was probably all they could get as well, because they were green.
Yeah.
So they've taken every opportunity they could, and there's day work in between. So they've been exposed to loads of different ways of working, different leadership and management styles. They've had guests from all over the world. They've been exposed to some, you know, they've lived in different crews, and they've got a bunch of references that all say, what a good kid, give them a chance. And they get overlooked. And that really annoys me, because I think, you know, both candidates are excellent. You know, both have excellent references. But this one's probably a bit more flexible because they've done everything. You've done so many different things in one short space of time, you know, and are more likely to adapt.
It comes down to working with a professional like you who's checked references. And the end of the day, that's the key. If you check a reference, app says, great guy, I just couldn't. He was just doing a relief position and I couldn't find a role for him. And I'm like, but he's a good guy. He's a great guy and he can drive a tender. That's the reference. You know, so working with professionals like yourself, to me, is the key to good crew placement.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, and I think a lot of captains are discovering that or rediscovering that after where they give it a go themselves. It's like, oh, I might save the boss a few quid. It's like, but you've spent like hours and hours. You've pulled all your hair out. You hate it. It's a horrible part of your job. Horrible. Whereas you can outsource it to someone like me who loves it because, you know, I'm a weird person like that. Yeah, I love the recruitment and the interviewing and the reference checking and matching people up. It gives me a huge buzz. Captains hate doing it, and we know that. And it's like, so just let me do it, and you can do your actual job, your real job of, you know, running that vessel safely and securely for the owner. So
I appreciate you saying that, because that's how I feel. It's like, you know, you don't paint something yourself. You get a professional painter. You know, you don't paint it.
Exactly.
So So if you're going to do something as important as crew, which is one of the most, if not the most important part of an ES. Anyway, we're going to wrap up before it cancels. One more time. Tell us how they can find you. What are your thoughts?
This is Super Yacht Life, how to start, succeed, and stay sane. This is your one-stop 400-page Bible. So this is your guide for your journey in the yacht industry from start to finish. And it doesn't matter if you're at the start or even near the end. There's even exit strategies in here. There's mental health. There's all sorts of good stuff in here. You can find it on all Amazon platforms in various formats. And you can find me all over the internet. So just search my name, Erica Lay. I'll come up. I'm on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. And I have a website. So there you go.
Thank you for your time. It's incredibly valuable. I really appreciate it. Also, thank you for what you do for the industry, for the junior crew, the senior crew. And that book is going to be an insight that people can use to build their own level. And they can refer to it during tough times in the middle of a season. They can flip back and go, all right, what's my
experience? That's what I hope. Yeah, that's really what I hope. Thank you so much for having me, Liam. It's been a pleasure.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.